I see 629.
Alright, we're inching very close to here.
Second in the hall, discussing something.
Minute by.
Oh, okay, then we'll.
Wait for a matter of seconds.
Start our meeting. Hello. Are there any citizen comments from anyone? None? All right, we'll move on to the next item. I don't have any reports to any committee members. Okay. No committee reports, then we're on the minutes of June 16th. Any additions, corrections, or discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I read the minutes and they appeared to be materially in good order. I was moved for approval.
All right.
Second.
Any discussion? Or seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Sheriff's Department resolution, Captain Staples.
Good evening.
Hello. Yeah, hi. Join us, please.
Supervisors, I'm here on behalf of the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, which we were awarded a $1,500 Walmart Foundation grant for the discharge planner program. Behind me, I have Direct Supervision Officer Ed Hartnell, who actually coordinates the program. The program helps individuals suffering from addictions and receives treatment through the Kenosha County Health Department, including therapy and medical assistance and treatment. The funds will enable the program to buy supplies that inmates may need upon release from custody, for example, clothing, snacks, and etc. This grant is free of charge. The resolution requires funds from the general fund, grant funds from the general fund, nor expenditures. So you have it in front of you. I brought Mr. Hartnell to answer any questions you may have regarding the grant.
All right, very good. Discussion or questions, either?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the next item is the public human resources resolution to approve appointment of Tim Stocker, the library board.
Good evening,
yes.
Chairman.
Hello.
Supervisors, youth and governance. We are seeking the approval of the county executive's appointment of Tim Stocker to the library board system.
I'll be abstaining.
All right. Discussion? Resolution?
Mr. Chairman, it would be an honor move approval of the resolution.
All right.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Congratulations.
I think you have work to do.
Yeah.
You're fine,
though. Thank you.
Thank you.
More meetings.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, the next item is Public Works Resolution. Jim Cuthbert. Jim, where's, there it is. Okay, right in front of me. All right, go ahead.
I don't know all of you folks, but I'm Jim Kupfer. I'm the CFO for Public Works. I'm here on behalf of the Highway Department. Clement would normally be here, but he had to run to Chicago to pick up his daughter to get her home to Madison. So I'm filling in. I think I'm briefed. This is an intergovernmental agreement between Kenosha County and Lake County for the intersection of 39th Avenue and State Line Road. As soon as you hit State Line Road, it becomes Lewis Avenue. And there's an intersection there that way back in 2019, Illinois did a study on that road. If you've ever driven there, the road's pretty beat up. They're going to fix it. And there's a lot of traffic there. I just drove there today at about 4 o'clock, and there's 3 or 4 cars going in each direction. So it needs to be replaced. And they had a choice between improving it into a better four-way stop, which it is right now, or putting a signal in, or putting in a roundabout. And roundabouts, as you folks probably know, they're safer, they speed up traffic. So they decided that they wanted to put in a roundabout, and they are planning to, look, they will pay for the construction of the roundabout, they will pay for the resurfacing of the road, it goes like a half mile each direction, they will pay for all the design. The only thing Kenosha County will end up paying for is right away at that intersection. And on the north, let's see, in the northeast corner, there's a house. It's pretty far set back. And on the northwest corner, it's all a big field. So we're estimating we probably have to buy about a third of an acre of right away. And it would cost maybe at a max $150,000, and everything else is paid for. Now, we've had a handshake agreement with Lake County over the years for the maintenance of the State Line Road. They do all the maintenance from Sheridan Road to 41. We do all the maintenance from 41 up to 45. It was never written down, so it's written down and is a part of this agreement. And they do all the maintenance to the roundabout. All we have to do is take care of what's plowing the road in Kenosha County, up to the roundabout. It's very common for when we do these agreements for, like with Racine, when we did Highway KR, they paid for all the property on their side, and we pay for all the property on our side. Our only investment in this is this $150,000. We'll probably buy the property next year, and construction will start probably in 2024. So we're asking for your approval for this IGA. After it's approved by this committee, it's got to go to the county board, because it's a IGA. And after it's all approved by the county board, it goes back to Lake County to be approved. But most of the document was written and approved by them already, because they did a draft, we did a draft, we sent it back to them. What you see here is their final draft approved by our legal department.
Discussion, John.
Yeah, it sounds like something I'd be in favor of, because it sounds like they're paying for most of it. I'm just curious how high the roundabout about will be in the middle. Do you have any idea about that?
No.
That's a no.
The reason I'm asking is because that's the way we got one of the speeders in the county, MB and C roundabout, traveling 100 miles an hour. They didn't see that and roll their car when they hit that thing.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure it's going to be high enough to stop those people again in that intersection.
I can find that out. I don't have a picture from that way. I've got pictures from above it and diagrams and with pictures and arrows and stuff, but not that. I can find out, though.
I'd appreciate that.
Let's just hope not too high is the right answer.
10 feet would be just great to stop a lot of
that. You can't see around it to slow down and not stop.
See if anyone's coming.
There's a balance.
Okay, fine.
Plan ahead.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, thank you through the chair to CFO Cuffer. And looking at the map, I see two parcels in red hash marks on the north side of the road. Is that what we're buying? Maybe we can.
The other slide.
Yes.
That's what we're paying the $150 for. And
well, just a part of it.
Right. The hash marks are what we're best just buying part of what's in the hash marks?
No. Okay, and I see the red hash. We're buying what's in those hash marks, yes. Right.
Up to the blue.
And that's it. That's what we're buying.
Yeah.
That's the $150.
Yes.
Okay, that answered my question. I yield the floor.
All right, any other discussion? Yes, Jim.
Have we looked at what other construction is going to be going on at that about that same time so that we don't create the congestion?
In our plan, no, but they're going to be doing the road east and west of that intersection, and then they're going to be doing the next intersection up, I think, is 47th Street. They're going to, we're not involved in that at all, but they're going to be doing something else.
Okay, well, we can't control that, but, okay.
So, but no, there's no plan for us to be doing easy is 39th. We're not going to do that.
Right.
Commentary. I did attend the works meeting as well on this, and a lot of the discussion was similar, but there was also discussion about safety. It's an intersection that has significant safety issues, and this will improve that. It'll improve traffic flow. Also, roundabouts are lower cost. You don't have lights to manage, et cetera. And Illinois is taking the full burden. So for us, it's a win. It's a very good opportunity, so.
Yes.
How are we paying for this? Because was it budgeted?
It'd be budgeted in next year's budget.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. All right, any other discussion or resolutions, motion?
I would move approval.
Second.
Second.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
Thank you very much.
All right, very good. I just did pass the other committee, the highway.
Yes, sir.
Yes. All right, moving on to the finance resolution on the issuance of debt.
We have Greg Johnson from Ellers here to walk us through the
resolution. All right.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here this evening. I'll be speaking about the two pre-sale reports that were included in your packet that are related to the two resolutions that authorize financings for the county's 2022 capital financing. So we're going to start with the general obligation note issue, the $13,735,000 promissory notes. There's a written report that kind of covers the first five pages that kind of summarizes what I'm going to explain this evening, but I wanted to begin with the project list that is found after the written report with the heading Kenosha County 5-Year Capital Outlay Projects Plan. You'll see a summary of the 2022 budget in terms of all the capital projects that were identified for financing within the county's 22 capital improvement plan that had totaled $25.8 million. There have since been changes to some of the projects, and so the total project amount that's anticipated to be financed is $5,980,000 less than what was originally identified in the 2022 budget. So before I speak to the debt service impact of this project, I'm going to turn over to staff. I know wanted to make a few comments about the changes in the project list since the budget was adopted.
Yes, so on this page that Greg is referencing, it shows in a column changes to new resolution, or to November resolution, excuse me. So about five or six lines down, Brookside 5, we had in the 2022 capital budget a roof replacement at Brookside for $480,000. We had a bid out and it came in over $640,000 for that project. So with staff's recommendation and the fact that the repairs aren't immediately necessary, the thought is to push that back to next year and rebid it and see if we can get it closer to what the original estimate would be. So we're proposing not to reduce that amount to borrow in August. The next one would have to do speaks to the South Pike River project. We had in the budget $2.243 million to borrow for that. We're proposing reducing that amount by $1.5 million and leaving in $743,000. The thought there is that project, we're re-examining the overall scope of the project, so we're leaving an amount in there regarding the study of proposing redoing the project and subtracting the $1.5 million, which the whole amount had to do with purchasing of real estate as part of that project. The third item has to do with the job center renovation relocation project. We had $800,000 in there for design of that new facility. we're backing that amount off because as a result of the state grant that Kenosha County is to receive a $9.85 million. This $800,000 is eligible to be drawn down from that grant. So instead of borrowing it, we can draw it down from that grant.
Before you move on to that one.
Sure.
Remind us or explain, what is relocation? I'm looking here at the list.
Sure.
Job center.
That was the name that that project had at that time, because if you remember, the county board at that time had just had the decision of either to purchase, either to remodel that existing or to go to a different location. So that's why it was either renovation or relocation.
Oh, job center. Oh, yes. Yeah. I was thinking completely something else. Okay.
The next item has to do with the KCC office renovation and elevator. The new administration is re-looking at this project. There's $100,000 worth of design that was part of that project that's already been underway. However, the balance of that project will be reviewed to see if we would proceed in that manner. So we're proposing to back that off as part of this authorizing resolution. A little farther down has to do with Kemper Shoreline Restoration. We had that in the budget. We are going to borrow $1.5 million in conjunction with a $21.15 million grant that we're hoping to get from the federal government. Unfortunately, they did not grant Kenosha County that, so therefore we'll be backing off that $1.5 million to borrow. And lastly, in the transportation infrastructure improvements, there's $900,000 reduction there. What that is over the last 3-4 years, there's been an accumulation of basically nickels and dimes from different projects that have left over, in addition to some premium that we've received as a result of the lower rates in our AAA rating, or AA at the time, rating. And with that, so we have that accumulated in Fund 411, so we're proposing to use that leftover balance to reduce the amount that we have to borrow. So the total of all these would, as Greg stated, reduce the amount of borrowing by $5.98 million, down to $19.82 million.
Questions, discussion? Brian, what about the Kemper restoration, shoreline? What's the plan about that?
So my understanding is that we're still attempting to get some grant funds. The new administration also has some contacts that will go in that direction. Unfortunately, we're one of many in line, all having that same problem with shoreline erosion. So,
even if we were to secure a grant, it's not something that we would move forward on this year. So we felt it was not prudent to borrow the money this year. We'll revisit that as we find out more.
Hey,
Chairman, thanks. Through the chair to Budget Director. On the South Pike, you mentioned the $2,243,000, which was reduced by $1,005,000 to $743,000. It had been primarily planned for property purchases, but could it be used for planning purposes?
It could. Yeah. Yes.
So the appropriation unit would permit that.
Correct.
And might it be used for that?
It would qualify under that. Yes.
Can any of that money that we're getting from, for example, the state or the federal funds qualify for the shoreline?
Are you speaking to the ARPA fund?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
that shoreline is at some point, it's got to be fixed.
Right. At one time.
Yeah. Initially, we did not believe ARPA could be used for the shoreline. Initial guidance on ARPA was saying that you could not use federal funds as your non-federal match to a federal grant. So we didn't budget it in that manner. Instead, we used ARPA funds towards the Highway S project because that goes into federal project. In the meantime, the final rule has come out and Treasury changed that and now made it that you can use ARPA funds as your non-federal match. So now, yes.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Bill. Back on the South Pike, I recall that the Army Corps of Engineers is paying the lion's share of the fees for this, and we had a certain amount of matching responsibilities to count it. But there was prognostications made that there would be certain ways of obtaining grant funding, matching funds in kind to reduce our exposure for those costs. Have any of those come forward along with what we're talking about here?
I'm not aware of any progress in that avenue regarding that.
So that's something we may follow up with Public Works on and see what the situation is, if that's coming to bear less responsibility for us, but that'll be for our future.
Jim, you have something on
that? I can speak for a second. The county executive took a tour this week or last week, and she also spoke to Dave Giordano and asked him to get help, and Nancy Rattana, who's our grant writer. They're working on it. They got a bunch of them, but nothing is for sure. But there's several inquiries in the works.
So it's in the works, and results will be forthcoming, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Go ahead.
Thank you. After the project list, I'll walk through the financial analysis. This includes analysis related to both the notes and the bonds. But we'll start first with the county's existing general obligation debt, kind of looking at the county's existing debt profile before we look at the impact of the proposed new financings. So in table one, it's just a summary of the existing general obligation debt payments. Total principal and interest of existing debt is in the far left-hand column. And then the county budgets various non-levy revenue sources to help abate some of those annual principal and interest payments, namely receive some revenue related to City of Kenosha debt service, and then revenues from the Brookside facility, and then premium from past bond issues are used to abate the debt service levy as well. So in that net tax levy column, that shows the county's current tax levy for debt service, both the past two fiscal years and projected going forward without the impact of any future capital borrowings. So this just shows the current levy picture and the estimated tax rate for debt service before we look at the impact of proposed financings.
Anything on that page? Dave?
This is just the current debt, not the new debt. The $16,761,374 is the levy?
Correct. That would be just for existing debt. We'll look at the impact of the proposed financings and future financings in another table.
Okay. That's my question.
All right. Anyone else?
Table 2 is just a summary of anticipated borrowings for projects over the next several years. This was based off of the detailed capital improvement plan project list that the county provides. We just summarized this for purposes of building our multi-year financing model. So the only projects that are part of the resolutions on your agenda this evening are for 2022. The 2023 through 2026 projects are just based off of the current draft of the capital improvement plan, are in here for future planning, but are not, you know, have not been authorized by any prior resolutions of the county board or not on your agenda this evening. When we look at debt issuance, we like to model out several years worth of debt issuance just to demonstrate how the levy could be impacted based on the current version of the capital improvement plan. So again, the amount that you're considering this evening for the general obligation notes is summarized at the bottom half of this table. It's $13,490,000 of projects and $6,330,000 of projects are part of the notes and bond issue. The next table, table 3, is the sources and uses for the proposed note issue. So this includes $13,490,000 of project costs. Everything that was in column one of the first table that went through the project list. And then you'll see the total amount that's being authorized with the issuance expenses is $13,735,000. With the changes in the project list that were funded, The amount that was projected to be borrowed when the authorizing resolutions were approved by the county board last November, this dollar amount is $3,710,000 less than the amount that was anticipated to be borrowing before that. Roughly $5.9 million of project costs was removed from the 2022 capital budget.
Discussion on that page? What does that mean? Human services building taxable? Then I don't see anything there, but
that was the project that was identified to be financed at $800,000 that was removed from your capital borrowing.
Oh, okay.
So that was originally part of this financing. The reason it's zeroed out is because you're not borrowing for that project due to other funding being available.
Taxable part was just on the levy?
It would have been a taxable debt issue instead of an exempt debt issue.
Oh, really?
Because the funds are being used towards a project. Towards a building that we would be leasing for a period of time versus owning initially.
Okay.
Per bond council, that was there.
Yes.
Opinion.
Table 4 is the estimated principal and interest and amortization schedule for the general obligation notes. The balance of this project is related to the general capital projects of the county. There's also a portion that is attributable to the CABA High Impact Fund. So we show the amortization for each of those types of projects and then the total principal and interest from 2023 through 2032. So the total principal and interest on these 10-year notes is estimated at $16,511,025. When we compare that to the principal and interest that was estimated based on the borrowing amount authorized last November, this total debt service is $2,175,000 less than what we were estimating in our analysis for the 2022 notes last fall. This does take into account, and I'll speak to this more in a moment, changes in interest rates since last fall and how rates have steadily increased really since the beginning of the year. I have a graph that I'll speak to in a few moments that kind of illustrates that, but we've kind of factored in that market movement since this was last reviewed by the Finance Committee last fall, as well as factoring in some additional market movement between now and anticipated sale in mid-August.
Right, discussion on that.
Well, the big chunk of what we cut out is being chewed up by higher interest costs, so good thing we cut a little bit.
That's correct.
What is the estimated interest cost, or interest rate, I mean?
So in table,
it says down here, plus or minus a half point.
Yeah, if you look in the center under the estimated rate, we're estimating rates from 2.9 to 3.7%, so that's, we use kind of we're trying to be conservative, we use kind of rates from a credit that's about two notches down from where the county is and added in another 50 basis points for market movement between now and the time of sale. So hopefully we'll see interest rates continue to maintain and be relatively stable between now and sale, but we have factored in additional increases in rates.
So with this fact, the Fed rate increase, if it goes a 1% at the end of this month, then that's, you've already factored that in?
Yes, we've tried to factor that in already.
Okay, thank you.
The next table is table 5, and this really looks at the multi-year financing plan, both the 2022 notes, the 2022 bonds, your existing debt service, and then we've modeled out future financings all the way out through 2026 based off of the county's current capital improvement plan. So again, this is really intended to kind of provide a multi-year look at capital financing for the county, understanding that there'll likely be changes to the capital improvement plan for years 2023 through 2026. But this is just based off of that current version of the plan. So this kind of shows an all-in scenario. If everything was funded as presently proposed, this is what the estimated impact would be for the debt service levy. So in the far left-hand column is your existing levy for debt service that we had summarized in Table 1. And then we show the estimated principal and interest for all future financings from 2022 through 2026. So in the far right-hand column under the levy and tax rate column, you will see how the total levy for debt service is projected to change if all of these items in the capital improvement plan were funded. So in your 2022 budget, the debt service levy from 2021 went up approximately $630,000. From 2022 to 2023, with the 22 financings included, we're projecting that the debt service levy would go up about $766,000. Really beyond that point, it's really factoring in these planned future debt issuances that, you know, have not yet been authorized but are here for planning purposes. So with everything included, that debt service levy increase from 2024 to 2027 would be about $1.2 million per year. Then the debt service levy declines in 2028. That's really the end of our planning model, because we have factored in debt issuance out through 2026, which would impact your 2027 budget. Future financings would not shown here would impact your debt service levy in 2028. So we've kind of built in a decrease to the levy to account for any financings that may occur beyond 2026. So this is intended to, again, just provide a long-term forecast, look at kind of full funding of the capital improvement plan. This gets updated as a new CIP list is developed each fall, and updated each time the county goes into the market, just to kind of give a multi-year look at the impact of debt service for capital projects. But again, all that's being authorized and discussed this evening is the 2022 financings.
Discussion or questions? How do we, if you know, how do we compare to other cities of comparable size approximately?
You fare very well. So, I mean, as was mentioned, your rating with S&P is AAA. Your rating with Fitch is AA1. So you're at the highest or near highest level of the credit rating spectrum. The county has historically had very healthy reserves, strong budgeting practices, and by doing this multi-year forecasting, that's looked at very favorably by the rating agencies as well. The county is looking beyond its current fiscal year and adopted budget at what current trends are. So, you know, the county has historically fared very well, you know, in the markets and with the credit rating agencies, and, you know, we expect that to continue going forward.
All right, anyone else? Next page.
The next page is the county's general obligation debt analysis and debt matrix. So the statutory debt limit is that your principal outstanding cannot exceed 5% of the county's total equalized value. In terms of the county's internal tracking of that, in terms of its own policy metrics, the county deducts from the total debt outstanding debt that was issued in the past to refund prior debt obligations, also subtracts out portions of debt that's paid back by the city of Kenosha, subtracts out any debt service related to the CABA High Impact Fund, and any debt service related to the Brookside facility. So that net principal outstanding is how the county is typically look at its debt metrics in terms of its direct debt burden. So we add in all the proposed debt issues that are identified in the multi-year model. And so we look at several kind of key metrics based on the county's debt management policy. So the first is the adjusted debt burden. So kind of the county's direct debt burden after some of these other debt issues are subtracted out that I mentioned. The county's policy is that that direct debt burden will be no higher than 0.8%. So even with full funding of all the capital projects in this plan through 2026, that direct debt burden percentage is not projected to exceed 0.68. So under the maximum of 0.8 identified by the county. Another key target in the far right-hand column is the debt service levy as a percent of total expenditures. The policy target is that that would not be any higher than 15%. Again, based on full funding in the capital improvement plan and allowing for projecting future increases in expenses, that percentage is not projected to be any higher than 10%. So these are metrics that the county has had in its debt management policy for several years. We discuss these with the rating agencies just in terms of making sure that the county is implementing and following those benchmarks that are identified in your policy. So this will be part of what's presented to the rating agencies, but we typically present it here to the committee and county board as well, just to demonstrate that those policies that have been in place for several years are being followed and tracked closely.
As many of the committee are new members this year, assuming that everybody isn't familiar with the terminology, perhaps you could just briefly explain, for example, the difference between a note and one of the bonds, and how does one get into the shorter term versus the longer term?
Yes, sir. A note is, by statute, has a term up to 10 years, and a bond has a term greater than 10 years up to 20 years. And then there are certain statutory criteria that has to be applied to determine whether or not a project, you know, can be bond eligible or not. And so that factors into the determination of what goes into notes and bonds. But from the county's perspective, to kind of focus on the term of the debt, the bulk of the county's capital projects are typically financed with notes, have a term of 10 years. Really, the county is using bonds for primarily some of your larger road reconstruction projects that have longer useful lives, so you're taking advantage of that 20-year amortization term. So really, from the county's perspective, it's really focusing on that term. Notes is used for the bulk of your capital projects to amortize that debt within 10 years, so the larger reconstruction projects are financed with notes, or bonds, excuse me.
Any questions on that? Yeah.
As long as we're on the subject, when you have a bond that has an amortization of 10 to 20 years, is it, how can I put this? It can be to the county's advantage that if the interest rates go lower, we can negotiate some of the terms on a bond or we can refinance, correct?
Correct.
However, if interest rates rise, we would still, as a county, have full protection that we would not have any more debt service than what the contract calls for in the bond, is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. All of the county's bonds are sold at what's called fixed rate debt. So on the date of sale, that interest rate is fixed, whether the term is 10 years or the term is 20 years. All of the county's note and bond issues typically have call features. So for the notes, it's typically about a 7-year call feature. So after, as you get closer to that 7-year window, if interest rates are more favorable, you can refinance the debt for savings. If interest rates are not favorable, those existing rates remain in place. The same is true for bond issues. Those have typically a slightly longer call feature, but same principle applies. If interest rates in the future are more favorable, you can refinance or you can pay down a debt issue if you have some excess funds. But on the day of sale, interest rates are locked in. So if interest rates increase from the date the bonds are sold, the county's protected and locked in on interest rates based on market conditions when the notes and bonds are sold.
Good. That's my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other questions that you'd like some definitions or anything on the procedural? All right. Oh, go ahead.
See, not definitions, but you make assumptions on future debt expenditures. Are we aware of any major capital projects pending other than the job center?
The 5-year CIP, so that's what Craig was alluding to.
So you have that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what all these debt issues are modeled off of, is the 5-year CIP.
Anyone else on that? Anything else?
Just one last page on the pre-sale report for the notes. Just shows a graph that kind of shows the trend in municipal bond indices and yields over the past 2 years. So the line that's probably most comparable in this situation is the blue line on this chart. This is what's called the bond buyer index. It shows what the average yield on a group of bonds is in 30 years that has a average rating of about in the single A category. So certainly the county is well above that rate, but it kind of shows, double A category, it shows that change in the blue in terms of how that yield has changed for that 20-year grouping of bonds with an average rating in the AA category. So as you can see, going back to July of 2020 to where we are now, yields have gone up significantly. But in a historical context, where we see bond yields now is comparable to where they were back in 2019. So we've been in a very favorable interest rate for a very long period of time. So when you see rates go up, in a fairly short context, like this chart demonstrates in a 2-year period, it looks, rates have gone up since the beginning of the year, but also important to kind of keep that in context, that really we're still looking at rates that were still available in the bond market as recently as around 2019. So while rates have gone up, they've gone up from very low levels. As you can see, kind of some sharp increases, particularly in March, kind of through May, then saw a dip and then kind of shot back up, and then the last week or two things have kind of leveled off again. So it's been a bit volatile, as you've all heard, in terms of the economic news, and the municipal bond market hasn't been immune to that. But again, just wanted to put this into context in terms of where rates stand today compared to where they've been over the past couple of years.
All right, any further discussion, Bill?
Anticipated sale date of these items we're considering will be when next month?
It will be August 16th, the date of the county board meeting. So kind of what transpires, if the sales are authorized by the county board to proceed next week, we're scheduled to have the meeting with the rating agencies on August 1st and August 2nd, and then the bond sale will occur on August 16th, and then closing receipt of funds by the county will occur on September 1st.
So would we want to meet before the county board as a committee to approve on the 16th?
You certainly can do that. That's certainly your prerogative.
And then bring it to the board that night.
Yes, the sale will occur that day. So we'll know the sale results by the time meetings are convened in the evening.
So if we meet at 6:30 and have the meeting at 7:30, that'll work.
That is fine. Yes. Yes, sir.
All right. So first item is the resolution to approve the
13,735,000.
Oh, it's 735. That's printed. All right. That's as modified.
Correct, with the changes in the project cost that Barnes summarized.
All right. Discussion or motion?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And before the board requires only a majority vote, correct?
Correct.
All right, and then we'll move on to the next one, the resolution authorizing the issuance of 6,490,000 bonds. Discussion or motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move approval of the bonds.
Is there a second?
Who seconded?
Brian? All right. Discussion on that? All right, seeing that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes. We'll circulate this. And does the committee then approve of the idea that we would meet before the county board meeting, either at 6:30, 6:45?
Mr. Chairman, I would agree with 6:30.
All right, that's a motion.
I would move to have a special meeting before the board meeting of August 16th, begin at 6:30 p.m. to have on the agenda the bonds that are in the market on that day, any approvals necessary to get executed.
All right.
Second.
So we have a meeting 6:45 here.
6:30.
6:30, I'm sorry. For both the notes and the bonds, and you will be back to make that report.
Yes, sir.
All right. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next is this advisory levy number 11. Does everybody have that there? All right, Patty, do you want to begin by explaining what it says or what it means? This is a recommendation, the 1.75. Do what you please with that, but there is an explanation, and Barb Prater will refer to it, so you can either disapprove, amend, or do nothing.
I wanted to start out by with a number of new committee members to the Finance Committee to give a little background on this. In 2005, the County Board approved a policy which requires the Finance Committee to bring to the County Board a advisory levy recommendation each year. It dictated what the format of the levy forecast would be, and it tasked the Finance Division to prepare that document as part of this resolution. So page 3 here is the detail that the Finance Division prepared, and it shows expenses that are, some are that are discretionary, some that are built into our course of business, wage increases and such, and then there are figures in here that have to do with historically what levy increases we departments have had. So to go down the list, we have personnel expenses dealing with the wage increases. We have the debt service increase, which Greg noted before that it was $766,000 projected for next year. Health and prescription insurance cost increases having to do with historical increases in that area, net of any planned benefit design changes or cost sharing with employees. We have a joint services increase. Historically, that's been in the $300,000-$400,000 range. Next year for the sheriff's inmate, the medical contract, we're anticipating a $360,000 increase to that contract for next year. So that's built into this. In addition to that, the sheriff, human services, and public works have non-personnel operating expense increases historically in those dollar amounts, $300,000 or $275,000. Human services, an area, an expense, a material expense that has a great bit of variability is the placements, and we've put $200,000 estimate increase to that for next year. Net new positions levy would include any new FTEs that would be included as part of the budget process for 2023. The district attorney temporary staffing, that has to do with the resolution that was brought forward in May, having to do with the temporary staffing. Liability insurance increase having to do with increasing claims in that area. Historically, IT data processing cost increases of $100,000 and then $25,000 estimate for property insurance. So a total of those would be $6 million. Those would be offset by potential decreases in the levy, which would include increasing the sales tax revenue line item for the county of $1 million, and then other unknown revenue sources at this point, estimating that at $900,000. So that would be 1.9, which brings the total net increase to levy of $4 million. So the box underneath that which shows that if the general purpose levy would increase 1.75 million, it would provide for 1.27 million increase. So comparing that to the $4 million calculation shown above, it would show that in order to reach that levy percentage increase, we'd have to either cut expenditures or increase revenues to the dollar amount of the $2.8 million. That's comparable to other years, and that, like I said, that's accomplished by cutting expenditures, increasing revenues, or using other revenue sources, including ARPA funding. The other calculation that's required here shows that with the advisory levy percentage of 1.75. When you compare that to our net new construction amounts that we have annually, in the last few years we've been averaging over 3%. Last year it was 3.25%. So when you compare that to the advisory levy percentage for the county homeowner, it would be a projected actual levy in decrease. Should say decrease there, my apologies. Decrease for the county homeowner of 1.5%. When you take into inflation into account, this was through May CPIU count of 8.6, which I understand the new one just came out and it was even worse than that. So even with, so if you include inflation as part of that, it would actually be a reduction of over 10%. The last calculation we show there at the bottom is just a rough estimate of what the estimated taxes on a $100,000 home would be for 2023 using this 1.75% levy increase, and that would show roughly a $24 decrease per $100,000 home. The next page shows basically in paragraph form the information that's provided on the first page. It also includes things that are not considered as part of this. So there are things that we cannot estimate at this point. If there's any state budget changes having to do with unfunded mandates, if the juvenile placement costs go up considerably higher as a result of placements through the courts, inflationary pressures on things, and of course if we have, God forbid, continued COVID pandemic effects related to that. And then the last one, it just reiterates the debt service components of the estimate. So with that, I conclude.
All right, discussion. Here.
Go ahead, John.
Right. Yeah, with the inflation now raging over 9%, it's probably a real shot in the dark just trying to put this thing together. So I congratulate you for being able to do something there. I think it's going to be a tough year for us, and I hope it is as good as you say that.
Here.
Just some questions. So the non-personnel operating expense increase for Human Services, Public Works, and Humus and Sheriff, what would those be?
Those would be historically, when you look back the last 5 to 10 years budgets, those would be the increases that we've normally incurred. Non-personnel related.
Like, for example?
Gas.
Okay, I was doing
gas.
Gas,
public
food,
works,
food
and
for
yes.
the jails, things
correct.
Like that.
Yep.
Where
yes.
yes. And are you taking in, are these like last year's increases, or are you also including increases because of inflation and the cost of goods?
This is a historical look.
Okay.
We realize budgeting for next year, we will be looking at realistic going forward. But to do this report, we don't want to skew things unrealistically. We use the historical averages as well.
Okay. What are other unknown revenue sources? Because if you don't know the revenue sources, how do you put a dollar amount in there?
Again, historically, we know that there are various revenue sources that end up doing better when it comes time to September when we're putting in the final budgets. In years past, we've had good revenue coming from, let's say, register of deeds with a lot of real estate transactions going on. When we look back at current year and then do a review of a few years prior to that to see sometimes the revenue projections by the departments are a little understated, so we're able to push those closer to what we think they would be, and so that would fall in that category as well.
Okay. You also have net new positions levy, which is $200,000, which on average that's probably 2.5 full-time personnel or two, somewhere around there. Is that a normal number we throw in there?
That's like
in
a net,
there, or
net
is there
number,
a plan
because there
that?
Are positions that are eliminated
okay.
as part of that. Absolutely, that's a discretionary one, but historically, we've done pretty well at keeping FTE increases to minimum, usually net 3 to 5.
Right. Keep in mind, sometimes the FTE increases will be in human services and funded with grant money.
Mm-hmm.
So this is only those that affect the levy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the sales tax revenue, an increase or decrease in levy, increase in revenue, $1 million. Is that historically what it's been going up? Because I'm
not historically, but last year and this year.
Okay, and historically it was not that much?
No.
Okay.
No.
Right. Like, what did it used to be?
The year before last, the increase in sales tax was $250,000 over budget.
Okay.
Surplus in sales tax. Last year, the surplus was $2.6 million. Yeah. And this year, as Barna will report with the general fund report, we're trending
830-some thousand over budget.
Now, we do know that with inflation, we expect discretionary spending to go down, and we do expect sales tax revenue to decrease over the record numbers that we've been seeing. But at the same time, with some of the economic development that's going on in the area, there are purchases involved in the building projects which drive up our sales tax revenue. Mm-hmm. So,
well, also price increases also drive up.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, when you're paying $4, $5 a gallon of gas instead of $2, your money's not being spent
right elsewhere. You don't have the money, the discretionary income to buy from Amazon. Everyone said, oh, Amazon was great during COVID. It honestly, the online sales drove up our sales tax revenue. Mm-hmm. We know that. But at the same time, when you're spending twice as much on gas and extra on food, that discretionary money is not there to spend on those online purchases that you might have had before.
Okay. And then also, are there any TIF projects falling off that will affect the increment where we'll actually earn tax revenue on those increments, or is there none falling off, or have we anticipated that? Or
yes, there are two. Pleasant Prairie closed TIF number 2, and we'll talk a little bit about that with the general fund report. And the city is supposed to be closing TID 28, which is the U-Line TID on the west mm-hmm. side of the interstate. And I don't have a dollar amount on that yet.
Okay.
In fact, I don't really have the TID 2 dollar amounts yet either. That closed in February, so that would be the valuations that we will get in August. So
okay.
We get preliminary EV numbers August 1st and final on August 15th, and those values will be part of that.
And they will be, we will get that revenue next budget.
Yeah.
Okay, those are not in here though.
No.
Okay. Okay, that's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Brian?
While we, Supervisor Rodriguez is here, while we did a tour at the detention facility, they were extending to us that there will be increases in medical expenses, et cetera. Have those been passed along to you? Is that captured here?
That's the $360,000 that I was looking at.
Were you finished?
Yes, sir.
Is that because of COVID or some other reason?
It was a contract revision or amendment that was proposed by the current vendor.
Oh.
They're like every other employer, are having difficulty with getting their staff. And so as a result of that, they requested an increase to their contract amount. The county negotiated a couple of things in our favor to offset that as part of that as well. But that's what's projected for next year.
Zach?
I had a different issue, but I kind of want to go off what we're talking about, this jail expense. The Judiciary and Law Committee will be meeting on this at our next meeting, and to the chair of staff, is that just going to the Judiciary and Law, or is that coming back to this committee? Is that agreement?
The agreement itself technically just needs to be discussed at Judiciary and Law, but certainly could come to finance.
I think it might be worth your committee taking a look at that. I had some concerns, and we tabled it at the last meeting until next month, but we just entered into that contract, and now they're asking for a substantial amount of more money this year and next year. The Sheriff's Department has identified other sources of revenue to offset that gain this year, but it is concerning to me. I get why, but it's concerning to me that we just entered into a contract, now that vendor is saying we need hundreds of thousands of dollars more. But moving from there, the joint services increase of $400,000, if I'm reading that right, there's a glare on the TV there. What is that projected to be used for?
That is the amount that would be our portion dealing with the city, county. That would include wage increases for their staff and their just general overall increase to their budget.
Has a $400,000 gain as well?
That's what we project, yeah. Yeah, roughly. Ours is like 55 to 45, so it would be less than 400,000 for them.
Anyone else, Dave?
Mr. Chairman, thanks. Following up on a couple of Vice Chair Decker's questions on the personnel increase, do we have some automatic personnel increases with lags? Because we, let's say, had a half year of, you know what I'm talking about. So does that number include the lag that we have? So
it does.
So it's not like we're adding new staff, it's we have a lag from 2022 anyway. Yeah,
this figure is actually very close because we actually, as part of our 2023 budget development, we provide the personnel numbers to the departments. So this is built right off of that. So it literally takes the a download of the personnel that's at the county in April and projects that out. And this is, that's based on how that calculation goes.
How much of that is from the lag? How much of the 200?
We estimate that at
what? If I may, Matt Lays, Assistant Budget Director. I just gauged briefly at the numbers, and it looks like half of our staff were hired in the first 6 months of the year, and half are hired in the second 6 months. So you could, if you don't take into account where staff fall within the range and not doing a deep dive, I would say maybe 30 or 40% of that is a lag number.
And then on the new construction, that's set, as it says in the report here, 2021, which is 1/1/2022, right? And the final report comes in mid-August, if my memory's right. But we get a preliminary before that.
Right.
And did we get the preliminary?
No, we will not get that until August 1st.
Okay. So we're almost to the point of getting the preliminary, but it says new construction actual 2021.
2021, so as of one... The net new construction that we received last August in 2021.
Oh, so that's used as the estimate. So the new construction number could be. Do you have an idea what it will be here? No. And then on the but we'll know in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
But the TID that goes back on the tax base won't hit till 1/1/2022, which will help the 2024 budget.
Right.
So the TIDs that are getting closed won't help us in 2023. Is that right?
You said 2022. You mean 2023?
Depends on when they're closed. I think I got the dates right, but I can repeat it. Okay. And we can go through the tape, and if I was wrong, you get a beer. If I was right, I get a beer. But okay. So 1/1/2021 is the number. 1/1/2022. I was wrong that time. 1/1/2022 is the number we'll use for the 2023 budget. There weren't any TIDs that closed in 1/1/22. There were no TID closures
as of
in that number.
Correct.
Right.
So technically, the TID closures are hitting this year.
Yes.
And so they'll hit the 2024 budget.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's like a 2 year lag?
There'll be a lag.
Yep.
Okay.
But we could claw it back. we could do that. That's one way of helping balance the budget. Not the best practice, but the money would be there. But so I think that I just wanted to follow up on the question about the TIDs so that we knew that it wasn't there for 2023. But there will be some cash we get, right?
Yeah, I'll talk about that in the general fund.
Okay. I remember getting cash a couple of times on some TID closures in the past when I worked here. So when TIDs close, you get the cash in that year.
Yep.
And that's the sum of my questions.
All right.
I yield the floor.
All right, anyone else discussion? Bill?
So I'm looking at the second page of the document, and if I understand this correctly, if we were to subscribe to the 1.75% increase, not to exceed 1.75 or less, still, the two budgets, 2023 versus 2022, we still have a $2.78 million shortfall.
Correct.
And that can be ameliorated or fixed by increased revenue, perhaps the sales tax comes in higher, perhaps the construction comes in higher, or we have to make cuts, is that correct?
That's correct.
We do get more information coming forward just in a few weeks, the 1st of August, right? We get an update.
Yeah.
We get an update on the equalized value, yes.
Okay. In terms of the new construction being estimated 3.25%, what about just the general appreciation that goes along with property values? Does that enter into this calculation at all? It does not.
It does not, because general equalized value increase, the pie gets bigger, but your piece of the pie gets bigger as well.
Okay.
Net new construction means there's more people involved that are taking parts of that pie now that were not before, so then that helps to equalize it out. So the net new construction really has an impact, but the overall equalized value, although good for the county, is not, doesn't correctly. Okay.
So if I'm reading between the lines here, this $2.78 million discrepancy is kind of, in a way, I suppose, in a worst case scenario, because if the other factors come in higher, sales tax or new construction, whatever, it could very well be less than that. I mean, it could be more as well. But we're looking at probably, just hopefully, optimistically, this would be a worst case scenario. Is that kind of the
way you look at it? Yeah, and this is comparable to numbers in previous years.
That's my question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Gabe.
Yeah, we have to have as to change 2.798. How much do we need to lay the percentage change by 1.25%? In other words, instead of 2.8, so roughly, to get a 0.25% increase or decrease, how much money are we looking for?
Well, if 1.75% is 1.2 million, 1.3 million. So it'll be 4 or 7.
$250 million.
Yeah, 250.
Yep.
Okay. So basically, if it's at 2.5, let's say, instead of 2.8, will be below 1.5%. Correct? The levy increase.
Million, correct.
Sorry?
You said two. If it's 2.5%?
No. In other words, instead of 2.7.
Oh, okay.
8,
yeah.
3.1, roughly. Right. So then the percentage of the labor.
Knocks it down to 1.5.
Knocks it down to 1.5.
1.5.
Yeah.
And if it's the other way around, it would be over 2%, what I said before.
Yeah. So a quarter million.
So quarter million for. Okay.
Yeah, either way. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I had in the past, I've been against this resolution at all times. I think this year I'm going to vote for it because I've been maybe more involved on a daily basis of what's going on. And I can see all the work put into it. It's a pretty good guess. I feel confident that it's going to be a little bit less than the 1.75, but with the inflation and everything else, even the 1.75. It might be the first year.
Right.
Since this is based on assumptions, personnel expense increase, what number or what percentage are you using for compensation increases in your formula?
It's 3%.
3%.
The current wage schedule gives a 3% of midpoint increase if people are within the range of their position. Now, some people are really technically getting more than 3%, some are getting slightly less if you analyze the actual dollar amount because it's the midpoint of the range and they may be over the midpoint or under. But as the budget numbers are being put together for 23, and that's what Assistant Director Matthew Lays was talking about, and Barna mentioned. They've used a melded budgeted rate per person and calculated what the anticipation is for 23, and that's where this money, where this number is coming from.
It seems soft to me in our inflationary market that we're in. Everything is rising rapidly, so people are essentially under that going to be 9 points behind inflation. And
yes,
that's going to make, and I'm leading to, we have an environment where we're having trouble hiring, retaining, etc. Is this number going to hold, or is the exec going to come back with something much more substantive?
There is a class and comp study that's being done, and that will tell us where we may be deficient when it comes to that, various classes of employees, and at that time, that's where the administration's decision will be whether to adjust some of those upward.
And there will be discussions about the timing of when those would go into place and what the overall costs are and how we work all that in.
Because I keep considering our current real environment we're living in and numbers based off of PY and 2 years back, so using historic data sets to come up with these numbers. I just don't believe this is going to be realistic once we really get down to making the buy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further discussion? Anyone? Seeing none, what's your pleasure on
it? I would move approval of the resolution at the 1.7.
All right,
Mr. Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right, thank you. We'll circulate then. Is that Bill's some circulating?
It has been passed around.
All right, we'll go to the next item on the agenda, and that is audit of bills, which we're doing, and then some reports. Nothing from human resources and general fund finance.
Yep. All right, so Mary will get that up on the screen, so hopefully everybody got a copy of the general fund year-end forecast. Just a little history. This is a report that projects how the county is doing budget to actual for general fund. Now, the general fund does not include Brookside or the golf course. Those are proprietary separate funds. This includes just about everything else in the county. So what this does is projects budget to actual where the county is at this point, I don't know, mid-year. So I like to start out by always showing the numbers, figures at the bottom. It shows what our projected general unassigned general fund balance would be based on some of the factors that we're projecting. And that number is something that the rating agencies hone in on, what our unassigned general fund, that's like our balance that we can use towards expenditures. The general fund expenditures number, that's $75 million, that's taking an average of 3.5% over 2021 final general fund expenditures figure, and therefore you get a percentage comparing the unassigned versus the expenditures. So that percentage is again another factor that the rating agencies look at, and the higher that percentage is, the better, more favorably they look at. The county board has a policy, general fund policy, general reserve policy, I should say, that requires a 17% minimum. And you'll see that line in there, and it'll show that how high above that minimum we are at 17%, and we also have a target of 25%.
there is a copy of that general fund reserve policy at your place if you don't have
one. Okay, good. So I'll go through the detail of what our projections are at this point. So this is a mid-year, roughly with 5.5-6 months worth of data. So items that would cause an increase to the general fund, we're projecting at this point human services to have a $2.6 million surplus. That's comprised of mainly two material items. $1.4 million aging and disability division, surpluses in their institute and residential placements. Also transportation expenditure surpluses and admin cost surpluses. The other component of that is $1.2 million, the Division of Children and Family Services. Their placements projection is doing very well, but to be conservative, and with the increase expected through the summer months historically, we're projecting a surplus there of $1.2 million. So between those two, that's where we come up with a $2.6 million. Sales tax, we talked a little bit about that before. The sales tax revenue surplus we're projecting at this point is $835,000. That's based on 4 months, so there's always a two-month lag of when we receive the information, so this month we'll get the information on May. Through the first 4 months of this year, three of those months were all-time records for those months, and last month, April, was an actual all-time high of any month Kenosha County history. It was $1.96 million. Surprisingly, it was April. It wasn't September or something having going into school. So overall, year over year, we're 9.2% higher than we were last year, which is on top of an 18% increase that was 21 over 2020. So we're on a good projection there, but as Patty explained, we're going to keep an eye on to make sure that there's a potential for that to potentially trend downward. The next one is workers' comp insurance surplus. Right now we have lower claims, so we're projecting a small surplus there. Sheriff's Department operating expenditure surplus of $250,000. When you combine that with the section below on items that causing decrease to the general fund, the sheriff revenue deficit of $1 million. So together we're projecting a deficit of $750,000. When we get to the bottom section, I'll explain the revenue deficit, but between the two, we're projecting $750,000 deficit for sheriff. Vacancy surplus, this has to do with all the departments, not including Human Services, Sheriff's Department, and Public Works. The vacancy is contained in there in those specific numbers. So the 2.6 million number for Human Services also includes vacancy as part of that. Public Works, $100,000 operating surplus overall, $100,000, that also includes their vacancy. And then miscellaneous, speaks for itself, $100,000 estimate surplus there. In the section for decreases, we're projecting at this point $1.15 million deficit in health insurance. That's with 6 months of claim information, of which we've got, because of the 45 to 60 day lag, claims incurrence to when we pay them. So we're basically looking at only 4.5 months worth of data there. So it's a rough estimate at this point. The sheriff's revenue deficit, so that's comprised materially of two different line items there. So our federal inmate revenue line item, we're projecting a $500,000 deficit at this point. Our numbers of inmates that are that we're housing for federal is lower than our budget at this point. That obviously number fluctuates and it's based on what inmates were provided to house, but at this point we're running at a deficit. And the second piece of that has to do with the state, the revenue related to housing of state prisoners. This
started in 2020 and continued through 2021, where with the pandemic, the state was leaving their inmates in our jails longer, and then they reimbursed us. Last year, they reimbursed us for that. This year, so far, they have not reimbursed us. There's nothing to indicate that they're not going to reimburse us, but to be conservative, we're taking the amount that we're projecting, 75% of what they would reimburse us, and that would result in a $400,000 deficit there. Tax treasurer delinquency interest on tax.
Yeah. Is that on parole holds?
Yeah. Parole holds, and I think there's another category. I'm not sure it's not here. There's like two different categories.
And is like the other one's U.S. Marshal mainly?
Yeah.
And is that on the docket for the Judiciary Committee? Do they are they having discussions on those revenue? Okay, through the chair to the chairman of Judiciary.
I'm sorry.
Are those revenue failing to meet revenue targets? Is that on your? Are you aware of that?
I was not.
Okay.
Yeah,
just want your committee to be informed of that.
We'll notify them, that committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next line would be the treasurer tax delinquency and interest on taxes. These are the revenue line items in the treasurer's department. General fund interest revenue also is down result of that. We also are incurring lower general fund interest revenue because of the large dollar amounts that we receive for ARPA. We're not investing that in our traditional short-term
when we received the first tranche of ARPA, we put the entire amount and invested it with Dana Investments. Those investments are conservative investments. Interest rates were not the highest, but they were definitely higher than LGIP. But they will mature over the life of ARPA. And we did not have a cash flow need to draw those out. So they are still in there maturing and we're not rolling out the cash flow. When we received our second tranche of ARPA, there's about $7 million of expenditures in the 2022 budget. So we held six point six or whatever the number was. We took $10 million and invested it with Dana. They are anticipating a 3-4% return on those dollars, not last year's dollars, but these dollars. And we will start to roll out some of the cash to continue to flow through to fund the ARPA projects as we move forward. But in the short term, those are not showing, we do mark to market, they're not showing any positive numbers at this point. They're starting to, some of the first $16 million are starting to show some positive numbers as we move along. So we expect this number to increase, but we don't have the physical support of that at this time.
The $290,000, those are reserves that are used as part of our reserve policy. Each year we can use up to $300,000 each year of reserves toward the next year's budget. So we have $290,000 there. We have a slight deficit in liability insurance due to higher claims, $250,000. Slight increase in tax delinquency reserve of $200,000, and then a slight deficit having to do with the circuit court, county clerk, and registrar deeds revenue. So all that added up equals a projected $640,000. That's the number in the bottom box there. Addition to the general fund, putting us up at, to $24.5 million. Which is $11.7 million over the 17% minimum, $5.7 million over the 25% target. And at the very bottom, we touched on that a few times today, this does not include a $2.5 million projected proceeds from the closing of that TID number two at Pleasant Prairie of $2.5 million.
They have notified us. They notified us that the TID closed in February at the annual meeting. they let us know that they're projecting when the TID expenditure is complete, they will have an audit done, and at that time we'll have firm numbers. But based on their estimates, Kenosha County should be getting about $2.5 million. They expect that that will come through in October or November of this year. We didn't want to add it into the general fund because we don't know what use will be proposed for it. It could be, a recommendation might be to use it to offset capital costs instead of bonding. It might be used for a special project that we don't know. At this time, we wanted to let you know that it's out there. We don't have an audited number to say it's definitely $2.5 million, but I think the estimates are probably fair, and that it will be expected later in the fall, and as we get more information, then we'll come forward with something on that.
And this wasn't a budget item, so. Yeah.
So if the funds are received, they cannot be expended without a resolution and a budget modification, or they would be held and then roll into the 23 budget.
That completes my audit.
I guess I have a question. Do we, for the chair of staff, are you guys familiar with the issue going on in the city right now with property tax payments? So they collected all their property tax payments. Whoever their brink spender is, essentially the armored truck folks, came. They got all their cash and all their checks for people paying this last installment. Deposited the checks, they bank at Chase, I believe. Cash went in, Chase then sent the checks to some third-party processor who has, they've been lost. UPS lost all the checks. Every single check they lost. So now there's an issue. The city is sending out notices to these folks saying, hey, you need to pay your property taxes again because the checks were lost. They're anticipating that there might be some pushback because folks are going to say, I have my receipt from the city of Kenosha that says I paid my property taxes, I'm not paying you again. How is that going to affect us? Because in turn, the checks never get cashed, we don't get made whole on our portion of that tax bill.
That's the city.
That's the city.
Correct.
City.
So I know that the city's working with or against Chase, depending on how you want to look at it. Chase is working with, I think it was UPS or FedEx 102, who lost the checks. What does that look like for us? Because if we see some folks I'm sure are going to say, okay, I'll cancel my check and write you a new one. Other folks are going to say, no, I have my receipt, it says I paid you. If this is the first you're learning about it, I guess that's
first.
Then I think, you know, we should hear back from this, or at least this committee should hear back on this issue sometime soon, because that could be
I guess it depends on what part of the, usually when the checks are received by a bank, I would think they would scan them in or something.
That's what Chase sent them up to do.
They might have sent them up to Brown Deer to get processed because the bigger banks don't process them in-house. They, a lot of times actually, M&I Bank or BMO has a processing facility in Brown Deer that processes all those things for them.
They probably have a record of all the different checks, but right. You know, all the other data.
As far as is your concern the cash?
Well, my concern is
the cash would have never left the bank.
The cash went to the bank. Cash has been deposited. Right. Those who pay the prior tax and cash.
No. That's not what I meant.
I guess it's a couple. I think I know what you're asking.
Okay.
Right.
One, what happens if we don't get our money? That is our portion of that tax bill. Two, what does this do for folks who maybe paid their taxes, did everything they were supposed to do, and now, are they going to be marked delinquent now because Kenosha County isn't going to receive that if we don't get them in time? And then I know there's penalties, and I think this is a concern that, you guys have not learned about it, right, shame on the city, but.
This installment of the property taxes is not due until July 31st.
Right.
So they have from now till July 31st to remedy the situation and potentially make. Because that's 2 weeks right. away. That's number one. Number two, from July 31st through the 15th of August, the treasurer's office is doing settlements. So we're doing calculations of what the city owes us, what we owe other municipalities. So there's a period of time there as well. that, again, this may be remedied during that time. The tax certificates are issued on the 1st of September, so it is at that point in time that the treasurer's office would say you are delinquent and issue a tax certificate on that property. So there's time in between.
Right, and it could remedy itself, sure. Yes. I guess my concern is what happens if it doesn't remedy itself. And we have a large amount of property owners who say, I'm not paying you again, I've got my receipt here. And then, you know, it turns into some legal battle, right, where they go at between them and the city. We're sitting high and dry, KOSD, you know, Gateway, we're just, I mean, you told me this is the first you're hearing about it. This, I think, we should be looking at the what if situation if it doesn't resolve itself.
And just making it bigger.
It's going to be illegal.
So where's the cash?
It's still in your bank account, so if you paid the check, you got a receipt, it's still in your bank account, so you can waive a receipt all you want, but
if your account, your account hasn't been debited.
Right.
Your account hasn't been debited.
So I could see almost stop payments being issued on those checks at the expense of whichever the guilty party turns out to be.
Chase first and then the...
So then the issuer knows that it will not clear and can replace it with some of the
funds. You should be able to get a ledger of those impacted.
From the clerk, the treasurer at the city.
And what I've gathered is this was not a city issue. The city did everything they were supposed to do. This was a Chase and site plans process for all the stuff. And according to the bylaws and that,
further discussion.
Well, let's not blame the mail. It's a courier.
Yeah,
for once, it's not the mail.
Yeah.
On the comment from Supervisor Rodriguez, though, it would be good to know the total volume of what we're dealing with. I mean, how many millions of dollars is this? Because ultimately, if when they do a settlement, if they turn it over to us, we have to buy it back, it hits that $200,000 number.
Right.
Which, well, that number has been flipping positive before, so it surprised me a little to see it negative. I'm not sure why it's negative, but that's where that would affect that. So at least we should know how many millions could they be asking us to buy that back at some point. I don't think that'll happen, but that's the worst case.
Yep.
Sorry, Aaron.
I was going to say, I mean, if it's one day's worth of transactions, or do they sit on the all that money for how long?
I think it was a bulk pickup. I know it was an armored truck.
Well, no, the banks, banks process it every day.
No. This was the city gave one large chunk of
so
cash.
So they don't process, they don't deposit every day. So it depends long they sat on it.
Once it got to Chase, that's where the custody, so to speak, is now up in the air, where they don't know where the checks went.
So like one day or a whole
week or 2 weeks.
Right? We don't know what was in that envelope, so to speak, how many checks.
Good to know what our exposure might be in this case.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Barney?
No.
Brian?
Questions to the health insurance deficit and sheriff revenue deficit. Health insurance deficit, are we attributing that to COVID?
No. I pretty much the COVID expenditures are pretty minimal.
Okay, so it's not
that.
Illness due to COVID or anything else, so it's not a one-time blip, it's a real process.
Right. It's usually the first 3 or 4 months of the year we'll have higher claims, and then summer tapers off.
Healthier.
When it's nice weather, nobody wants to be in the
hospital.
Nobody
wants to do elective surgeries.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, and then the sheriff revenue, the federal inmates, did I hear correctly, those are going to Racine now and we've lost that revenue, or is that?
No, at one time we used to have ICE.
Yes.
ICE detainees, and those were pulled back by the federal government when we decided we weren't going to take them during COVID. They pulled them all out.
And we haven't reinitiated that process, or we don't intend to. In other words, is this a permanent condition, or is this a temporary?
This is separate.
Yeah, and these are different types of inmates. These are the federal marshals.
So the ICE inmates were pulled out in 2020 and have not returned. We have not budgeted for them to return.
Okay.
Okay. These are the federal marshal inmates, so there was a smaller number of those. Those did not get pulled out. Their numbers fluctuate. And right now they're in a dollar from where it was budgeted.
So since we stopped arresting people, we don't have people to put in jail? And then the state component, that's off $500,000.
That has to do with, that's just a conservative projection, assuming that they'll only get reimbursed 75% that they what they owe us. Last year they paid 100%. This year they haven't paid any yet, so I'm just being conservative.
Okay. Why would they reimburse below what their debt or what they're owed?
Last year, early in the year, they sent us a letter and said, we aren't going to pay you at all. You're holding our people, we appreciate it, but we're not going to pay you. They changed their tune. And then they paid us. So that's what gives us the hesitation that there's a possibility that they may not pay 100%. So they did pay us 100% last year. They just told us they weren't going to and then followed through.
Well, Joe's on payroll. Put him to work. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dave.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's for the sake of putting our best foot forward when we do the bond rating, I think it's still conservative and prudent to show that $2.5 million above the line and make that like a 36% instead of a 32% on the unassigned reserve. I just think that
can you clarify?
The $2.5 million is below the line. That
so it's not part of the increase. Right.
Oh, gotcha. Move that into the box.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it would be showing a 36%.
Yes.
You know, which would be a better number to show the bond readers than 32%. So I hope that what we do with the bond reading, that's what we do.
As long as you're on the TID discussion, are there any others in the pipeline to be closing in the near future?
We know that TID 28 is supposed to close with the city. We have received absolutely no notification that they have actually taken action to close it, nor do we have any idea what the dollar amount would be. Now, Pleasant Prairie informed us when they closed the TID, but it was at their annual meeting that they told us what the estimates were. The annual meeting for the city is not until September.
Okay. So that would be in the pipeline, so to speak, we expect, although the details are unknown.
Right. It is a much smaller TID, and my expectation is that we would not see those funds in 22. That would be something we would see in 23.
Very well.
Anything else? No other reports?
I have a question. Sure. Do we, back in 2020, I toured the jail. After the ICE inmates left or were pulled, and I questioned if we had done an analysis of what the actual cost of those inmates is, and I was told no, that we didn't know, we had not done an analysis. Do we do that for the inmates we have here to the federal marshals and the state?
We do projections when we're preparing the audit because the federal inmate fund is a separate fund. So it's easy to track the revenue for it because it's tied to an inmate. Then we do projections or estimates. There's not an exact, we can't tell you exactly how much it costs to feed that inmate, but proportionately we can apply percentages and come up with costs. I don't have the audit is not completed, so I don't have that number in front of me. I know that there was income used to be when the ICE inmates were still there about 1.2, but it was gradually going down because costs were going up and the reimbursement rate was not changing. And conversations with the sheriff's department were to get to a level where they would increase that rate would require us to provide other things that would be more of a cost than we would get return on. So that $70 per inmate per day had been the rate since the inception and had not changed. So the profit margin was decreasing over time.
Right. And I understand you don't have the numbers now. I wasn't asking that. I was just very shocked to hear when I was touring the jail that they didn't have an estimate of a per inmate per day cost of an ice hold was to see if it was actually worth everything we did. So.
You're the auditor.
Yeah, we, Mr. Chairman, to the vice chair, when we decided to house ICE inmates, during my career, it was the biggest levy reduction through revenue generation. If you take the sales tax and say that was used for capital and offset bonding. So that revenue was very profitable, and I always used to say I wish I could have a business like that and make,
millions.
The margins were great, and the risks were really low. I know that over time, for a lot of reasons, medical, COVID, supply and demand of labor, that eroded quickly and evaporated quickly, but the audit, as the finance director said, every year showed a pretty healthy profit. So they weren't accurate when they said we didn't have that. They might not have had it, but finance did that, and we made millions of dollars that paid for that jail. So
okay, good to know that.
And it's in
finance
the audit.
Did it, but
it's in the audit.
It's in the audit area.
Okay.
All right, any other business to come before the meeting? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there
second?
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, then we will see you before the next county board at 6:30.
Is there a meeting in August?
For this?
That's right. This coming Tuesday.